Welcome to MSDN Dev Radio. My name is Peter Ladotti, and I'm joined today with my co-host, Brian Hitney.
Good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, I'm Brian, and we're evangelists here on the East Coast. I'm down in North Carolina. Peter's up in New Jersey. So we started this series. Peter, what are we doing?
What are we doing? That's a good thing. Well, we're on the radio, so people might be hearing this maybe in the afternoon, maybe in the night, maybe 2 weeks from now, maybe a month down the road. So good whatever time of the day it is to you. Dev Radio is a new series on Channel 9 and basically features myself and Brian and, of course, a lot of our peers within Microsoft Evangelism talking about the latest developer technologies from the perspective of folks working in the field with it and also communicating with some of the folks on the product team. And Brian and I are focused on Windows Azure in our day jobs. So what we're going to be doing here is sort of a subset, a series of Azure shows on Dev Radio that Brian and I will host over the course of the coming weeks.
Yeah, it's a pretty exciting time because there is just so much new stuff coming, and not just in Azure, but you look at Office, Windows, it's really incredible the breadth of stuff that we're doing. So I think the best place to start is with all the new stuff that just came out with the June release.
So when you say the June release, we're talking June 2012. And to put that in context, Windows Azure has been around for a little bit over 2.5 years. It was first introduced in October of 2008 at the Microsoft PDC in Los Angeles. Went into preview mode all of 2009 and production in January of 2010. And this release that happened in June was probably the largest change or new set of features added since the product was, or the service itself, was first introduced in production in June 2010. So there's a lot to talk about there. Right, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, this is by far the biggest release that we've ever had with Windows Azure. So it is really exciting. So I think let's dive into some of these, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Good. So what we'll do is we'll start off by, I think the best place to start is looking at the new portal that's there, portal being our access into everything that's Windows Azure. So I'll show that and we'll go through some of these features.
So here we are. This is the new Azure management portal that Brian's going to give us a tour of. He's sharing this out on his desktop. If we look back at what Windows Azure has been historically, it's been majorly a platform as a service offering. So think of Windows Azure of having three major components: compute, which is the ability to store and host and run your applications; storage, the ability to, you know, put your data up there in the cloud; and then three just being the whole infrastructure and the high availability aspect of it behind the scenes. But when we talk about compute, we were talking about being able to run your application in dedicated virtual machines that Windows Azure provides to you. And the unit of deployment is your application code. As a developer, we get to write code, upload it, provide it to the system, and then Azure will launch these dedicated virtual machines and have them set up across a load balancer. And if one fails, it just does a recovery, brings up another virtual machine, slots it in with your app, and you're good to go. But the benefit there has been that you don't have to manage those virtual machines because they're given to you. But some customers have asked for more and more control over things. And in June, we introduced an infrastructure as a service offering where you can deploy the actual virtual machine itself and completely control it, as well as other aspects for an option for computing, including these new things called websites. So with that, Brian, why don't you tell us about what all these things are here on the left side in this portal that we're seeing?
Sure, Peter. So this is a new portal, and it's built completely around HTML5, so it's a much cleaner implementation. The previous portal, which we can still use by clicking the preview button up top, we could switch between this, the new portal, and then the old Silverlight-based portal. But everything that that we're going to talk about here, we could see each individual offering on the left side. We have all of my items, which shows this huge list of all my storage accounts, my cloud services, my virtual machines. And then we could dive into each one and see what we've got inside each portion or each service within Windows Azure. So we have our cloud services. That's what you were mentioning was our PaaS offering, or our platform as a service. Again, this is this is our bread and butter of Windows Azure. This is where we take our code, our application package, and we can push that up to Windows Azure and then have Azure manage the infrastructure completely behind the scenes from not just the hardware, but also the operating system, the patches, everything else. So we only worry about shipping our code up to the cloud. But as Peter already mentioned, is a lot of times people need the ability to host their own virtual machines. They want to be able to customize it completely. They also want them to be stateful. That's a huge thing that we've heard. One of the benefits of our platform as a service, not just shipping up your code, but each virtual machine is completely stateless, and that gives you the ultimate in flexibility from scale, so that if you need to scale to more instances, you can very easily do that. But the cost with that is that you can't have a truly stateful virtual machine. And that's where the Windows Azure Virtual Machines comes in, because we can set up a virtual machine. All of our virtual hard drives associated with that virtual machine are put inside Windows Azure Storage, which is a redundant, everything is backed up both in the same data center multiple times, but then it's also geo-replicated to another data center for fault tolerance. So those virtual hard drives become durable and stateful. So we can then create our truly custom virtual machines, and it becomes an infrastructure as a service then that as a user I can manage. And so all of this is available directly here in the portal. And just to give you an example of what virtual machines looks like, currently I don't have anything deployed here, but I can click create a virtual machine. And one of the neat things that we have is a gallery of predefined virtual machines that we can start with as a base image. And if I click on that, you can see that we have a number of different operating systems we can pick from.
Wait, whoa, Brian, am I seeing that correctly? Does that say Linux there?
I know that you. That's exactly wow. It. It's a little bit of a surprise, isn't it, to see?
Yeah. Wow.
And that's, I know it's a big deal, right? Because
this is not a joke, right? That's real.
That's real. And the real benefit here, again, is not just taking a virtual machine, assuming you're running Windows, but also we have a number of Linux-based virtual machine images that you could start from and use those as well. And then in this case, I also have a predefined image all the way down here that I've used before. So you can either build up your own images or use one from the gallery as a starting place. So for example, we know some people want to start with Windows Server with SQL Server on it instead of using our SQL database offering, which is an option. But the Linux, having the options to host a Linux server is really huge.
Now, that one down there at the bottom that you said is a custom, in other words, is that a virtual machine you built on your own locally and then uploaded it into the cloud?
In this case, no. You can do that. You can move virtual hard drives up into the cloud if you want to. But in this case, this was a image of Windows Server 2012, and I happen to mess with it a little bit for development reasons, and then it's still in my storage account. So then I can use that as a base for future images if I'd like to. So that's why we see that there. But obviously you would not see my own demo virtual machine, because that's private to me in my storage account. But that lets us set up then, if we have a custom install with a suite of software or whatever it is, we can go ahead and put that up there and then use that as a base to replicate, say, our infrastructure if we have a lot based off of one particular image. So it's just a handy way to quickly build out something instead of having to customize it every time. So this is pretty exciting stuff, and some of the newer stuff we're going to be doing, you see that we have BizTalk as an image that's up there, that's new. So it's pretty exciting to see all this stuff coming in there, and it gives a lot of flexibility then to take your virtual machine. If you want to pull it down and run a virtual machine, say, in your own data center, you could do that, or take something from within your own data center and move that out into the cloud. You'll have that flexibility. So the other big benefit to a virtual machine like this is there's no lock-in in terms of the portability of your virtual machines.
Well, now, the other case of cloud services, virtual machines are essentially provided for you. You know, it sounds like this would be a lot more work to set up my own virtual machine. No?
Yeah, it depends on your context a little bit. From the nice thing is that when you select a virtual machine from the gallery. That virtual machine is already pre-configured, sys-prepped, all of that, ready to go with whatever you happen to select. So if you just want a base Windows Server install, that's what you get. If you want it with, for example, SQL Server on there, then you'll have that pre-installed as well. After that, it is up to you to manage the machine itself. So if you want to get in and start customizing IIS or accounts or other software that's built on top of that, setting up shares, whatever it is you're doing with that machine, yes, it does become more work for you to manage. And that's why I still really believe that the platform as a service is for, especially for greenfield type applications where you have the ability to build something out from scratch. Just being able to ship your code up someplace still gives you the best inflexibility from a management standpoint. That way you don't have to worry about all of this. In fact, I've got a number of cloud services Peter obviously well knows because we've done these together, but we've run a series of programs from Rock Paper Azure to our At Home with Windows Azure programs. All of those are still running up in the cloud. We've had some of those running for several years, and the nice thing about them is that there's no management involved from us. We work on the code. Our at-home code is Peter manages that in TFS in the cloud. And when we push that code up into the cloud, we don't have to worry about were there new patches. Do we need to go in and tweak something? Windows Azure manages that all for us. So in this case, this would be up to us.
So for the virtual machines, it seems like it's a really good option for folks who need customability. And I don't know if I just invented a word there, customability, but customization, and also the ability to migrate an existing app on their own server definition. Whereas, like I said, the cloud services is good for something for greenfield. Now, back to the whole notion of just deploy your code and push that up there. Let's move off of virtual machines and talk about these websites, because that's also another avenue where you can just push your code, and that's pretty interesting too.
Right, exactly. So this was another really big release for us in Windows Azure, and we're going to talk more in depth about this with Brady Gaster in the next episode, where he's the Windows Azure technical evangelist focusing on Windows Azure websites, which had the codename Antares, in case that rings a bell with people who might be listening to this. But the idea with Windows Azure websites is we still wanted to make it very easy to take a website and prop something up there and get it running. Now, one of the disadvantages or one of the challenges, say, with our platform as a service or cloud service is that you take your code, you still have to compile it and ship it up there. But what about the situations where you just want to host your blog or a CMS system, or you just want something simple that still gives you the availability to customize something further and scale something out. So just to give you an example, I'm on the Windows Azure Websites tab right now, and if I click New and I'm on Website, notice that we have Create with Database, which will allow us to install a lightweight database for us to store stuff in, so we don't have to worry then about setting up our own SQL Azure instance or our SQL database instance. But if I click on From Gallery, you'll see that we have a number of built-in, just like with the virtual machine images, but now instead of just base operating systems, we have a bunch of pre-installed templates. So if you want to use Drupal or there's some in here, .NET Nuke is one, there's a whole bunch of things from WordPress and Orchard and so on. So you can select a lot of these even from e-commerce based templates and then quickly get up and running with that template ready to go. So you could create, for example, your WordPress blog, and I could have that up ready to go in just a few seconds, really.
The great thing here is, just like my surprise when you click the new virtual machine button, the first thing you see here in this Microsoft Azure service is Drupal, an open source CMS system. It's really nice to see that this platform is really open to all different types of developer technologies to run on top of it. This looks very similar to what you see in Microsoft's Web Matrix tool in terms of the web gallery.
Right. Yes, exactly. And when we do this, in fact, I'll close out of this because I already have, in this case, a website up and running. And if I click on this to dive into it a little bit, you'll see that we have a number, we have a dashboard here. Now, in this case, this application was just a sample that I was showing at one of our events. And in this case, we could see some of the stats like CPU time and data ingress and egress and all of that, errors and everything else. But there's a couple of things here, and I know some of this is stuff you're particularly passionate about, but notice here under the quick glance, there's a way that we can view connection strings, but then also TFS publishing and Git publishing. So did you want to speak to any of that? Because I know that that's some pretty exciting stuff.
It's very much so. You know, we'll talk to Brady about this more in detail in the next episode, but one of the things I like about websites from what I've heard about it and played with it so far is that, like you said, in cloud services, in the traditional, the old form of platform as a service offering, you have to package your code and you're getting a dedicated virtual machine, but you know, you get it by, to get a dedicated virtual machine, we have to boot one up from scratch off the shelf for you and then unpack your code into it. So deployment can take a while. And in websites, essentially, from what I understand, and Brady will correct me if I'm wrong, is that Azure is already running a set of live virtual machines behind the scenes, and it's a shared hosting type scenario. So when you deploy your code, you're deploying directly into a live virtual machine, and therefore deployment is instant, as if you're deploying to any server. And that enables us to set up the ability to publish directly from a source control repository like TFS or Git. And specifically, Git is of a lot of interest right now in the open source world with open source developers, because it's kind of the place to be, or the technology to use for source control and repository publishing, because of the way it enables distributed sharing of code. So that's really exciting stuff here in websites, and definitely look to dig more into this. I was going to say, let's go back to the portal and just run down a couple of the other features there, and then I think we're probably going to get close to the end of wrapping up here.
Yeah, that's true. We'll talk to Brady more about the Windows Azure websites in the next episode. But yeah, lots of new stuff now. Mobile services. This one is brand new, and what mobile services does, and I'll just click on, we won't dive into this too specifically in this episode. But the idea with mobile services is that we want to make it very simple for you to. Just like with Windows Azure websites, making it easy to get a basic website up and running, with mobile services, we want to make it simple for you to have a software as a service back end for your applications to support things like notifications for your applications. In Windows 8, this is particularly cool, where we want to allow users, for example, to authenticate perhaps with a back end access control system, if you want to send notifications down to the user to do that, or if you want to host data in the cloud, instead of having to roll all of this yourself, which you would typically have to do, mobile services tries to prop a lot of this up for you and gives you a bunch of sample templates to use right away that includes all of your defined connection strings and everything else just as a basic project for you to get going. And so there's some really cool stuff you could do with it, and we'll dive into that more in one of our future episodes for sure, because it is a lot of fun to play around with, particularly now because Windows 8, at the time we're recording this, we're only a few weeks away from launch, and Peter and I in particular are spending so much time talking to Windows 8, and because we're cloud guys at heart, this is really cool for us because it allows us to talk about Windows 8, but stick with what we really know best, which is our cloud back end, and being able to show mobile services and how easy it is to develop a Windows 8 application using the cloud as both a application portal and giving you access to notifications and everything else is really cool. Going down the list even further, those are cloud services. This is our standard platform as a service where we could just take our code, we ship it up, and we specify how many instances and what VM size and everything else, but this is where we don't go any further into the operating system from a control standpoint. We trust the Windows Azure Fabric Controller to manage everything for us. And so now the only thing we really worry about at this point is our code and maintaining our code.
So you might just gone a little bit too deep there for folks. What you just said, the Fabric Controller controls everything.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I did. So
I don't think we want to get into that, but just briefly, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so good point. When we take our code and we ship it up, in this case, to Windows Azure, we want our package to be completely hands-off, right? We don't want to be managing the operating system. The cloud, you know, the saying with the cloud is you always design for failure. Well, there's going to be failure in the cloud, right? Hard drives are going to fail, machines are going to fail, switches are going to fail. The fact that there's going to be failure is never questioned. It's just a matter of when that failure is going to happen, and then how you react to that failure. So the idea with the Windows Azure Fabric Controller in the cloud is that it manages the entire infrastructure and our cloud services for us. So if there's a hardware failure, in fact, the Azure Fabric Controller can also watch our application, so we can make determinations whether or not your software, say, is hung or something has catastrophically happened with your application versus, say, something catastrophically happening with the hardware, but then it will decide where to put your machines inside the data center to, for example, minimize the fault tolerances so that you don't have, for example, all of your services running in the same rack of equipment. It monitors all of these. It also load balances all the requests coming in so that the load is distributed across all of your instances. So it does all of this, and it manages it for us, so we don't have to worry about that. We don't have to worry about requests going to a server that's no longer running, or if we come in here and we want to increase our number of instances, that's the Fabric Controller's job, is to go ahead and take care of those tasks for us so we don't need to. And that includes rolling out new updates. There's a number of ways we could do that very simply when we have new versions of our code. And again, that's the Fabric Controller's job, is to do all of that management for us.
So if I could sum it up nicely in two words, Skynet?
Ah, boy, that's a little Big Brother-ish of you there, Peter. But yeah, that's the idea, right? Is to have everything managed for us, so we don't have to. Pretty soon, it'll be writing code for us too.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting, going through all those options of compute. So we just wrapped up there with cloud services, which is the old school platform as a service that Azure's always been. But we've added the infrastructure as a service with virtual machines, and the websites, which is probably even more platform as a service than cloud services.
Right.
Now, we saw a couple other services listed there, but we switched out of the portal because we want you to see our pretty faces on camera. So there's a SQL database, there was storage and networking. So let's just, what are those things? Because we talked about compute, but data is the other big part of Azure.
Right. There's so many. We talk about data today, right? It's not just relational data, but now the big thing is big data and what to do with large amounts of data. But essentially, you know, the nice thing with SQL databases, which was formerly SQL Azure, you want to take a relational database. You might be developing something on your laptop or within your development environment. You just want a connection string type replacement, right? You want to take your app, your database, move it into the cloud. You want it to be reliable and redundant, you know, say on a cluster level where you've got great performance, but you don't want to manage any of that hardware. You don't want to manage SQL servers. So that's what SQL databases allows you to do. And perhaps in a future episode, we can dive into that too. So many things that you can dive into. So hopefully we'll get around to it. But the more exciting thing with the cloud, at least I think, is all the different native storage options. And what I mean by native storage options, more designed around cloud and taking large unstructured amounts of data. And that's where Windows Azure Storage comes in, because there are several different ways we could store data in there, from tables, which is not a relational database, but more of a semi-structured type of way that we could put data in. So if you think like spreadsheets and log files, tabular data, we have huge amount. You can scale to terabytes and size of your data, but then also blob storage for binary objects. So if we want to put videos, audio files, JPEG images, JS files, all of that works really well with blob storage. So there's a lot of different options there we can work with, again, and that's those are all episodes in themselves going into each one of those, but a lot of new stuff.
And a key thing I think about storage, which is interesting, again, this is not necessarily new from June of this year, but it's all along, is that the storage is considered external to all of your compute options. So whether you're hosting something on a website, a cloud service, or a virtual machine, you store your data in these Azure storage services, and it's just something you go in the portal and you ask to have provision for you. You don't set up a database server. You just say, hey, I need a database. You know, you set up the schemas, the permissions, and all that stuff, but you're not actually managing that stuff. So in essence, these services are software as a service to the developer who's building something on Azure. And I think that's really unique and interesting as you dive into these options. And going beyond storage, though, Azure has a lot of other, we'd like to call them building blocks, but I just say other services that help your application scale when you're trying to reach a large scale environment where you're going to have lots and lots of users. And a lot of these features and services are things that, you know, normally if you're hosting something in your own data center, you would have to hire people to set these things up. There are extra servers to manage, things like distributed caching and memory, or having a CDN, like content delivery network, to cache static data close to your end users. These are all things that you could set up and configure servers to do. But in Azure, they're really just a tick in the box. You go in the, you know, the management portal and you order it off the menu, like you're ordering a service, say you want this to be turned on, and it just shows up and it works. And that's part of the beauty of being in the cloud, is that all of these services are just there for you. We can't get into all of these now, but I think as you watch this series here on Dev Radio with Brian and I over the coming weeks, and we plan to do these weekly or biweekly, we're going to keep them short, like, you know, 20 minutes, maybe a half hour. We're going to invite folks on to talk about all of these aspects of the system to give you a good understanding of that.
So, Peter, obviously the big question that we always address right away when we go into our events is, how do you get started?
Good question. And for that, we have a screen to show you.
Yep. So there's a number of different ways to get started. If you do not have an MSDN account, or if you do and you just want to use your personal live ID, whatever it is, there's a Windows Azure 90-day free trial.
That's a Microsoft account now.
Yeah, Microsoft. Yes, that's just like a lot of other. That's like Longhorn and Metro. We got to work it out of our vocabulary.
Oh, $5 for you in the swear jar.
I know.
So if anyone has a Hotmail account or has had a Windows Live ID, those things are pretty much now being called or referred to as a Microsoft account, which actually makes a lot more sense to me since they are used across all of Microsoft's different services. But anyway, something Brian, you were saying there that your Microsoft account is how you get started with Azure.
Right, so you can go in, you create a new account with the Windows Azure 90-day free trial. Now, we'll say this up front, you do need a credit card. We do that to verify you are a human being. And the nice thing that we have, though, is when you do this, we have a spending cap of $0 as part of your account. And what that means is that you do not get charged anything, even if you try to go over what your free trial allows you to do. We will shut down the account before you get charged anything. And so it's an actual explicit option.
90 days of free trial is not necessarily free? I don't understand. I thought if it's free, it's free. Nope.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, the whole point of the cloud, you know, if you look, the free trial gives you 750 hours of small compute time per month, and a number of other things that go with that. One of the things, of course, is that what if you want to practice scaling your application out? You want the freedom to be able to do that, to try it out. So we give you that many number of hours to be able to do that, to play around with it. And maybe that's running one small instance 24/7 throughout the month, or maybe you only want to play around with a couple or four instances for a shorter amount of time, you could do that. But that's the beauty of the cloud, right, is you use for, you pay for what you use, or in this case, you get for free a certain set of these services, and they scales what you need. So you have that freedom to go in there and use those hours however you want to. So if you want to use them all in one shot, you could do that and put up a lot of stuff. You'll burn through those hours a little quicker. And if you happen to approach that monthly limit, we send you a couple of emails saying, hey, you're nearing your limit, and that gives you the chance to go back in there and scale it down if you'd like to, or we'll eventually just shut it down once that limit gets expired. Now, if you really want to keep that stuff up and running, you can go in there, remove your spending cap, and then that way you start going off the rate that you know, is there for the, depending on the size of the VM and so forth. But that is there, though. I think that's a great option to give you the flexibility to decide how you want to spend those hours. And if you're already an MSDN member or part of the Microsoft Partner Network, there's a ton of built-in hours that come with your MSDN subscription, for example. So the amount of hours differs depending on whether you have MSDN Professional or Ultimate, but it's a lot of hours, so it's definitely worth it, even if you're just tinkering around and want to try it out. It's definitely worth doing because it's a great benefit to the subscription that a lot of people just don't take advantage of.
And one thing to note there, if you are on an MSDN subscription or through one of those partner programs, the Azure free usage is last for the duration of that subscription. So the 90-day trial is for 90 days, but if you have an MSDN subscription, typically those things last for 1 or 2 years, depending on what type of contract you purchased. So you basically have access to that free Azure account as part of your subscription for that long, if it's 1 or 2 years. And as Brian said, the amount of compute services and bandwidth and storage they provide you, they give you an allocation each month, depends on which level of subscription you have. But even at the lowest level, it's plenty as a developer to just throw something up there like a website and let it run 24/7 and not have to worry about it, you know. But if you do want to practice scaling things up, then, you know, you do want to manage your time. But the benefit is, by default, they'll just disable your account if you use too much versus charging you. But, you know, hey, if you build something and you really do need it to scale and go above those limits and you really want to put it in production, then you can go in and you have to do this proactively. They don't make it easy so people don't shoot themselves in the foot. You can take that cap off and then you would just pay as you go beyond your free allotment each month. You would get a bill in that case, but hopefully by the time you make the decision to do that, you know what you're doing and, you know, you're ready to put something out there for real.
Yeah, great. Well, we are out of time for this episode. What we're going to do in our next episode is we're going to be talking with Brady Gaster, the Windows Azure Technical Evangelist, focusing on Windows Azure websites. So we'll be able to dive into that feature a little bit further. And we'll then decide what we're going to do from there. I don't know if we have we have a number of speakers that we'd like to be talking to. We just got to figure out the timing for everybody. But we've got a lot of content to get through over the next couple of months.
I've got them all lined up here in my little portfolio. So
excellent.
We've got a ton of speakers. I just haven't called any of them yet, but we'll definitely have a full lineup. And I want to give a special thanks on our initial episode to our producer behind the scenes, Mr. Chris Caldwell. He's actually sitting in that white closet back there, pushing all the buttons and knobs and making sure that we're coming to you well. And he cuts out all our coughing and our splicing of making mistakes here on the show. So thank you, Chris, for making this possible, and hope to see you guys on a future episode here of MSDN Dev Radio Azure Edition.